You're listening to 90 Day Soulmate with the relationship engineers, Jim Golnick and Lisette Guevara, only on LA Talk Radio.
Tired of attracting the wrong type of guy, it's time to give something else a try. How she found her match? It is in the book.
90 Day Soulmate is brought to you by 90 Day Solutions.
Welcome to 90 Day Soulmate with Lisette
and Jim.
Today we're talking about, how do I choose fight or flight?
That's a good question.
In a relationship, maybe
any decision of your life.
Any decision, absolutely every decision. And all you need is a coin. No, that's not what you need. That's not how you do it. What are we actually talking about? We're talking about, how do I choose fight or flight? Fight being, it could be fight and stay in the situation, stay in the relationship. But it can also mean fighting for that relationship. It doesn't mean fighting in that relationship. It could be fighting for, or fighting for that job, the job you're in or the job you want.
Yeah.
But how to decide whether to do that or flight. What's flight?
It's maybe walking away.
Walk away, run away, fly away.
Forget about it.
Grab two birds and let them take you off into the sky.
Yeah.
So this came about because we've been talking to some different people. We've had some questions about, should I stay? Should I work on it?
Yeah.
My girlfriend, my boyfriend, my husband, my wife, my partner.
There's my boss.
these are the questions, and we'll talk about it, because sometimes it's not even a bad situation. It's just a, I'll call it ambivalent.
Yeah, in some moment in your life, you maybe want to change because you feel stuck or tired in some situations. So
you want to have more than one experience in your life.
Yeah, like you.
Only one experience in my life. That's it.
Okay.
27 jobs, 16 wives, one
house.
Car. Only one car.
Yeah, motley car.
Ha ha. So we are talking about how do I choose flight or fight, or fight or flight, depending on which way you want to look about it.
Mm-hmm.
So today's subjects are going to be, let's look at relationships and the balance, looking at them from a positive and negative standpoint, also looking at them from our biases. And do you know that most of the reasons that couples go to therapy?
No, what is?
It's because about 50% are suffering from infidelity in the relationship, either one or both of the two in the relationship. 50% approximately of couples in therapy are trying to work through that. Choosing flight plans. So are you going to take a flight and are you going to go? We found that more people think more about leaving and have more details in what they got to do in order to leave than those who want to stay in and fight for their relationship. That if you do nothing, you end up staying in the relationship, right?
Yeah.
Emotional paths to conflict. How emotions can move us to conflict. Chemical paths to infidelity. We're going to talk a little bit about evolutionary psychology.
Mm-hmm.
And fighting for the relationship. Not fighting in the relationship, but fighting for it.
Or both.
Or both. Maybe you like fighting, huh? So let's take a look at this and see what we got going on here. I'm trying to monitor and work on two computers at the same time. So here we go. Statistics say 20% of North Americans admit, this is adults, admit they have cheated. That, to note, infidelity is not a victimless crime. That means whether or not your spouse knows that you've cheated, or your spouse or your partner, know that, you, or your dog, you've walked a different dog today, But no matter if they know or not, it's not a victimless crime, because it can it changes the perpetrator as well as it changes the relationship. Severe pain. There is a severe pain, severe emotional pain in discovering betrayal. We've discussed this a little bit. Mm-hmm. I want to take you back to a conversation we've had before. I've been with you 13 years. I have all these, we talk about neuroplasticity and how our brains are developing together and we are connected more and more and more in different ways as we learn new things. We talk about new subjects. We study more research. We go to new places. Mm-hmm. We talk about our brains actually kind of have a piece of each other within them. Betrayal in a relationship breaks foundational building blocks of all that brain growth, meaning things that you built all these thoughts and relationships on between the two of us. So as our brain has grown with these new thoughts, these new ideas, our time together, that whole brain structure is built upon our relationship and a ever existing immalleable, like meaning that it's a foundation that it's built upon. And when there is betrayal, it rips apart and breaks that foundation, and it makes people so upset because it actually takes the brain and it torments it.
Yeah.
You know how people just go crazy when they found out there's something's going on with their spouse, or you know, it's like everything you believed, and everything that now is actually, when you believe something, you create biases, and we create biases. When you see new information, you pack it into your brain based upon those biases, and you form a structure of thought in your brain. When you take apart something that you built all those other things on top of, it basically destroys all the thoughts that you had that were built on top of it. And this is, I think, what the feeling is when you physically are just crushed. Mm. You're crushed because your brain, which has grown to know and love that other person and has actually built synapses, is destroyed.
And it's painful.
Very painful.
Yeah.
Is that you don't know what to believe anymore, right? Because not half of your brain, but depends on how long you've been together, a large part of your brain doesn't believe itself anymore. Because all those thoughts now that you based on something, you basically collapse the structure.
Yeah, yeah.
So just think about that, is that it's not just the betrayal, but it's what that betrayal does to everything else the two of you have known together in your life. So that's the crushingness, the pain of betrayal. In order to study this, there's a research scientist from Adelphi University in New York by the name of Benjamin Warach. Maybe it's Warach, but from Adelphi University. And he did a study with 300 men and women who he asked to pretend to be in a rocky relationship. So he's like, okay, let's do this study. I want some volunteers. I want you to pretend you're in a rocky relationship. Half of the volunteers were told, you are the cheater. You're the cheater in this relationship. And half the volunteers were told, you're the victim. The cheater, and they were told that the cheater had confessed to the victim that their needs were not being met in the relationship. Remember, a rocky relationship. It wasn't going well. Things weren't as they should be. And therefore, the cheater cheated and said that their needs, his or her needs, were not being met in the relationship. The victim was asked to think about hearing this from their partner. So the victims and the cheaters, who were all the volunteers who were told to pretend that you're either a victim or a cheater, pretend this is the situation. Cheater cheated. admitted that they did, but it was because of the needs not being met in the relationship. They then followed up with some questions. How they felt, but who was to blame? Was it themselves, either the cheater or victim, depending on who they were, their partner, cheater or victim, depending on who they were, and the circumstance, which included, you know, the rocky relationship, needs not being met, that type of thing, is who was to blame. Also, what was the perceived emotional impact on the victim? How do you think the victim felt? That was one of the questions they asked.
Okay.
So, what do you think the results were?
So may we share that?
We check. Look at the results here. So, the cheaters blame themselves less for the infidelity. Oh, can you believe that? Even people who pretended to cheat blame themselves less for the infidelity than they were blamed by the victims. So the victims blamed the cheater. The pretend victims blamed the pretend cheaters more than the pretend cheaters blamed themselves. So the pretend cheaters blamed the partner, the circumstances, more for the cheating than they did themselves. The role of the cheater or victim made the volunteers see things differently. Of course, the imaginary cheaters were less willing to take responsibility for cheating in this fake pretend cheating.
It's you know? A complicator.
So they call this a self-serving bias. Self-serving being you create a viewpoint, you create a belief in yourself that says that even if you are the cheater, you are still a victim somehow, and you blame others for the situation. So it's self-serving to have this. All of the participants agreed that the blame due to the victim and circumstances, meaning that whether they were a victim or they were a cheater, they all agreed that there was a certain amount of blame on the circumstance and on the victim, and that the harm to the victim, they all agreed that the victim had a certain level of harm, meaning whether they were a cheater or a victim, they all believed the victim had a certain level of harm. However, again, the cheaters blame themselves less, explaining it away again as the circumstance and the rocky relationship and needs not being met. So it was kind of interesting. So this is a pretend.
Mm-hmm.
So in a pretend circumstance, cheaters blame themselves less, which you think, okay, how would that compare to real life?
But I guess the human always protect himself.
They protect their ego.
Yeah.
They don't want to see themselves as being the bad person. It was because of this, and it was because of that. Well, we'll talk about this and that. Mm-hmm. Part of that being lust, part of that being emotions, part of that being...
It's just one moment.
A moment in time.
Every weekend.
I was on the boat, the bow of the boat, and she came up, and we recreated Titanic. The only thing that we didn't have happen was the boat didn't sink. But everything else was wonderful. So, whoops. Here we go. In the follow-up to this, they actually went to volunteers who really did have a relationship where either they or their partner cheated. And they asked them the same questions of who was to blame, them, the victim, the cheater, or the circumstances. But unlike the first study, the actual cheaters blame themselves just as much as the circumstance and the victim. But they also tended to blame the victim even more than the victims blame themselves. So the victims blame themselves somewhat, but the cheaters actually blame the victims more than the victims blame themselves. So in the fake one, the victims blame themselves, blame the circumstances, and blamed the perpetrator. In the real cheating, the victims blame themselves less and blame the perpetrator and the circumstance. So the cheaters blame the victims more than the victims blame the victims. So when it actually happens, the victims are now the cheaters think the victims are over dramatic.
Right? What is wrong?
The cheaters were also more likely to blame the circumstances than the victims were. And thought the emotional impact of the infidelity on the victim was actually less than what was reported by the victims. So don't believe the victim. They weren't hurt that badly. It's not as bad. Which now they're actually disagreeing with what the in real life they're saying the victim isn't as hurt as badly as they're claiming they're hurt. What's interesting about this is both when they were both victim, like here was somebody who was a victim and a perpetrator of infidelity. Mm-hmm. Now who do they assign blame to? And what's funny was it was cheaters were more likely to blame their partner than they were to blame themselves when their partner strayed. So this is the quote from the researcher. If I cheat on you, it is your fault. And if you cheat on me, it is still your fault.
Wonderful. You want to share this? That's, I like this statement.
You like that one?
Yeah,
okay,
yeah.
So here we go again. So cheaters were more likely to blame their partner than they were to blame themselves when their partner strayed. So as always, if I cheat on you, it's your fault. And if you cheat on me, it's still your fault. So the interesting part about that is where this self-protecting bias comes in.
Yeah, there you go.
And it's even stronger in real active cheating than it is in pretend cheating. So here's this. Cheater/ victims were also more likely to blame the circumstance. Estimate a lower emotional impact on the victim when they committed infidelity compared to when they were the victim. So I when I cheated, I hurt them less than they hurt me when I was victim. So as a victim, they said they were more victimized. So victims always felt more victimized. And a victim who was also a perpetrator felt more victimized when they were a victim than they said that when they cheated on that other person, they weren't really as bad a victim as I was. I was much worse of a victim. The double standard is an example of this self-serving bias, and this guy calls it sexual hypocrisy, that we always feel as a victim we're hurt more, and the perpetrator always feels the victim isn't hurt as much. The problem with this turns out to be that when couples enter therapy, half of those who enter therapy, we talked about this at the beginning of the show, mm-hmm. half of those going into therapy are doing so because of infidelity.
Yeah.
The problem with that is this self-serving bias puts them looking at the actual situation and issue differently. The victim, I'm the perpetrator, the victim, you're not really hurt as bad as you are. And as the victim thinking that they're hurt more, and they just don't see eye to eye on this, it gets in the way. So we seek to feel better about ourselves by placing the blame on the other person or the circumstance. We just have different schedules. They're so caught up in the work. We're just growing apart.
Yeah, excuse number 47. We have a list of excuses.
We have lots of excuses here. Let me put my glasses on for a minute and say we will discuss more of flight or fight, how to know the difference of when to do what, when mm-hmm. we come back on 90 Day Soulmate with Lizette.
And Jim.
Tired of attracting the wrong type of guy, it was time to give something else a try. 90 days, that is all it took. How she found her match? It is in the book.
90 Days Soulmate is brought to you by 90 Days Solutions.
Oh, welcome back to 90 Days Soulmate with Lizette.
And Jim.
We're talking about choosing fight. I can't even say this correctly. Choosing flight plans. And what does that mean for us? Well, if you don't have a plan, Like we were just talking to somebody mm-hmm. and they said, I don't know what to do. Well, what about your partner? Oh, they don't really know what to do either. Okay, so you have no plan. No plan whether to stay together, no plan whether to leave. So inaction means you decide you're gonna fight. You're gonna fight in the relationship. It doesn't mean you're gonna fight for the relationship. You're just gonna fight. You're not planning on leaving. Mm-hmm. So you have no plan. It's gonna be a fight one way or the other. With a plan, you can plan a flight. Mm-hmm. Like if you're leaving a relationship, you need to plan how to leave.
Yeah.
If you need to get a divorce, if you need to figure out what you're taking, what not. And it comes down to plan or not to plan. That is the question.
Yeah, but also you can see this plan for me is basic step, never mind decision you take. So when we discuss about the typical fight is something like that. Okay, I fight every day with this relationship. I'm working hard. Mm. But if you are in the same position, in the same feeling, year by year, so the plan is not working. Okay, so planning include target, include day, include resource, include who is responsible for what. So you need to create plan for both options.
So do you think there's an element of fear? Like if we don't do anything, I don't have to. Like I fear staying in the relationship. I fear leaving the relationship. I fear if I stay in the relationship, I might miss out on something for the rest of my life. But I fear if I leave the relationship, I'm never going to find anyone anyway. And maybe this is a really good relationship. Mm-hmm. And it's this fear leading to inaction.
And also fear to change.
Fear to change.
That's just the first fear.
I want to change, but I'm more frightful of what that change would be.
Yeah.
So I want a different job, but I'm comfortable in this job I don't like.
So it's like the leave your supposed comfort zone.
No.
Then maybe it's not comfort, but you stay there. So
what is that like? Out of the fryer and into the fire? So like you're in the hot boiling water and mm-hmm. you jump out because it's so hot and you end up in the fire. So sometimes maybe we feel that, like we're in a boiling water relationship, and if we get out, maybe we're going to get into a much worse situation than we're in right now. Right now, we talked about this, I think, last week a little bit, but not too much of depth, is that the financial difficulties that couples go through when they do separate, and now they have two households instead of one, even if they still have both incomes, they now have to take care of two households, that it becomes an expense that people who maybe haven't worked for 20, 30 years all of a sudden need to go back to work in order to have a certain level of lifestyle.
Yeah.
And so there's that fear of, oh, you know what, I'm just going to put up with it. I'm going to put up with it until the children are out of the house. I'm sorry, till the children's children are out of the house. So to plan or not to plan. This I found interesting is ambivalence. Ambivalence, I'll do whatever you want to do, you make the decision, right? You make the decision. I've heard that before from multiple people. It's like, you know, I really like my partner. Actually, I love my partner, but I hurt them. And so I said, well, what do you want to do? And they say, whatever you want to do. And if I say, well, I want to be romantic with you again, they're like, well, I'm not really interested in that. And so I have to live this life of I would be with them because they don't want to do anything different. They're comfortable being in a relationship without love, and they're willing to do whatever I want to do. So ambivalence means there's no decision, right?
Mm-hmm.
It means you're staying. Will your partner ever change? How can I trust you again in expectations? Let's talk about that. So, didn't you ask me this question? In order to determine whether you should fight for the relationship or take the flight and fly out of the relationship, one of the questions you asked me was, will you or your partner ever change?
Mm-hmm.
So, depending on that answer, like you go to couples therapy, right? And I've been to couples therapy before, not with Lizette.
I was your therapist.
She was my therapist. It worked out.
I think maybe.
So, in couples therapy, mm-hmm. if you and your partner are, you know, at odds with each other and your behavior, and you won't change and they won't change, or you will not view them differently and they will not view you differently. You will not accept each other's behavior or how you are and how you think. If you're never going to change, then the answer is fly away.
Yeah, and also one of the points is I can control myself or change myself, but I cannot have expectation that you change.
Mm-hmm.
So that is, I guess, the agreement between two parts, what area have commitment to change or not change, and you need to live with that, because that is part of the live with somebody. You not pretend change your partner.
Right.
And also you need to accept how is your partner.
And those two things together is that you need to, like for me personally, I need to change and I need to view them differently. And if you can say, I am willing to do both of those things, and both of you are willing to both change and view each other differently, then there's hope. Well, you have to be in it together. And the problem, I think, a lot of times, especially for me, going into therapy, was you'd go into the therapy session so emotionally primed or tight that it was very difficult to have those, and I'll say emotionless conversations that needed to be have to allow logic to come into the conversation and say, let's look at the reasons we should stay together. Let's look at the reasons that we should be accepting of each other and how we may change and how I should look to change to be with you. And sometimes those emotions are so heightened, you're so angry about what's just happened the last week, that the therapist is at in a no-win situation. They just can put a net up and let you play tennis, you know.
Yeah.
How can I ever trust you again? Oh, how can I ever trust you again? How can you ever trust me again?
This is my own decision, you know?
Right, and it's this thing that's out there, is that, yeah. Oh, well, time will allow us to trust each other again. And you go, well, how much time? And then, like, if anything happens between then and now, like, I come home a minute late from work, and suddenly you think I ran off with somebody from the office, and because you don't trust me, any little thing adds to this distrust.
Yeah.
That is it a, you will never trust me again. And maybe right away we should understand is that once we break someone's trust, that's it. Unless they say, you know what? I don't care. I love you so much. I trust you. I'm going to trust you now. But if it ever happens again, you're gone. That means relationship over.
You know. We take out the body.
And lastly, the expectation.
Mm-hmm.
What is the expectation of this relationship? We know we just went through some tough time.
Mm-hmm.
Do we expect that say we have kids? Do we expect that we want to raise our kids? We want to raise our kids. We want to set a good example. We want to have love between us, and that's the expectation. And we both agree. And right now, we're going to pretend this relationship is strong and going well, and we're going to act and do everything as if it is a real relationship. And we have to, you know, this forgive and forget. Maybe it's possible, maybe it's not. I don't know. For some people, yeah, they've forgiven each other.
Yeah.
What's next? Trust. So we're just talking about this here a little bit. How can I ever trust you again? How can I gain your trust? I remember having this conversation many years ago with somebody, and the person who was holding the decision of whether they could trust me again was both the victim, and I knew it. I knew they were the victim, and I could feel their pain. But then they became the judge of whether they could ever trust me again. And then I started to feel like they can just use this. They can use this challenge, issue, episode, whatever the case may be that caused this, and that now I have this unknown future. It's unknown. And now the decision's in their hands. And it's sometime in the future they're going to make this decision. And there was really nothing I could do to ensure that they would trust me again, because I didn't know what would break their trust.
Mm-hmm.
If it was saying I was bringing home pasta and I brought home chicken and therefore that broke the trust. And I'm being serious about this, is what broke the trust to me would have been something and to them would have been something different. So it's a really difficult thing to be in. The person who broke the trust is considered a trespasser. Not a trust passer, but they are the actual, we'll call it the cheater. But in this case, it wasn't cheating. It was other things that broke the trust. And when you get into a situation, we talked about this at one point, where we, you know, we talked about growing apart. The more we knew each other, the less we could have conversations because we realized how where we came from. Mm-hmm. The language we used, our beliefs, our values were different, and therefore how we phrased statements could come across as mean, even if we didn't mean them to be upsetting to the other person.
Yeah.
So, and then lastly, do we trust people we don't know more than we trust people we do know?
Yeah.
So,
yeah, I see that.
So, I cheat on you, mm-hmm. and you immediately go out and start dating multiple men.
Mm-hmm. Again? Okay.
No, but the point would be is that for 13 years, we have a wonderful relationship. Something happens. I immediately tell you, and then I never trust you again. And yet, you'll meet somebody like me a year from now, and you don't know them, you start going out with them, and you have put your trust in them. It's not like you have to wait 6 years to determine if you trust them. You trust people you don't know more than people you do know.
At one moment.
And is part of it because they broke that we talked about the brain and the new brain cells that are created, the new synapses and way of thinking, and they snap that. And there's actually no way to rebuild that.
I know. So that is when the people pass a bad relationship. Also, it's difficult to trust again any
man or woman. Too.
And a new person, too, because believe all, you know, the statement, all men is the same or all woman is the same. Mm. So you jump into the next relationship with some kind of the scare and the predisposition by your experience. Yeah.
So a broken trust in one relationship leads to broken trust at the beginning of the next relationship, and you go in kind of hesitant, maybe, to that relationship. Okay, I understand what you're saying. So, impact of emotions on a relationship. I'm happy, I'm sad, I'm angry. And I think what I try to do in this, and we were discussing this just before coming in here, is that here are a couple of statements. Impact of emotions on the relationship. Emotions play a part in the day-to-day relationship, because how we view what we see today in our relationship may be based upon the emotional state I'm in right now.
Yeah.
If I come home angry, anything that you do, I'll look at one way. If I come home happy, I could see those same things as being wonderful that tomorrow, if I'm angry, I'll see as annoying. So emotions can impact how we get along with our partner. Emotions were never meant to be utilized to form long-term relationships. They're not. Emotions are more of a communication thing. So if I'm happy, sad, disgusted, shocked, that these things, fearful, these aren't like, they're not useful in a relationship.
Mm-hmm.
They impact how things happen, but you can't use emotions for a relationship. So long-term relationships are not based on emotion. What are they based upon? That's the question. So we talk about happy, sad, mad, which is angry, disgust, contempt, fear, and surprise. And let's take a look at something here. I want to look at how we view our everyday. We're talking about every day we walk into our relationship and we have certain situations that occur. Those situations are the actions and interactions we have with our partner. the situations we come across and the context of those situations. What, you know, it's not just what we see, but what set it up as well. The circumstances and control. You know what I mean? Like, if you have no control of a circumstance, like I'm driving the car, and traffic impacts you differently when I'm driving the car than when you're driving the car.
Yes, definitely.
Because of control.
Yeah.
So, happy or sad, if you're happy or sad in that situation, that's going to make you see that situation different. Your biases and your fears, when you put it on top of that, is going to cause you to view things certain ways. And then we can look at, and what I thought of was the, quote, emotion of surprise. And, you know, the can you do the surprise face? That surprise can be what I call awe, like happy birthday, surprise, versus surprise, I jump out of the dark at you to scare you, and then surprise can be fear and shock, or a bear jumps out of the woods. Mm. That surprise, which is an emotional response, all these emotions are to aid in, one, changing our body chemistry to react in a certain way for survival, or to communicate to somebody close to us how we're feeling so they can instantly understand how we're feeling in that situation.
Mm-hmm.
So these are emotions are survival mechanisms. They're not relationship mechanisms. So if we're living our relationship based upon love and forgiveness and happiness,
mm-hmm.
it's we will, you know, we will be happy. Happy, you know, we're not going to do something in a relationship because we're happy, but we'll do something. Like anger takes us to doing something. You agree?
Partially.
Partially?
Yeah.
What do you think? Well, tell me what you think about anger.
No, because I believe that all emotion is part of your relationship and your human being emotion. So you have the capacity to be happy, be sad, be anger, be disgust. The point is how you handle this emotion and put the emotion the right way, intelligent emotion.
Yeah, emotional intelligence.
Yeah, so I guess that is the point. I'll say that the be happy is good and be sad is bad, because it's, you don't need to classify the feeling. You need to understand the feeling is part of any situation. Okay. And it's normal feeling. So you can be sad and you can be happy.
And you have to be able to recognize your own emotional state, understand what that means, and then be able to help control and contour the situation for a better outcome.
Yeah, but you cannot say, I want to be merry, always happy. No, right. It's not true.
No, because happy is it's like a thermometer.
Mm-hmm.
That you put a thermometer into the relationship and it comes up, oh, it's happy right now. It's sad right now. I'm fearful right now. It's basically these emotions are a thermometer or an indicator of how you are emotionally right then. And they're instantaneous. They're not like you can't be like happy all the time. You only recognize if you're happy when someone asks you, are you happy? No, I'm sad. Are you happy? No, I'm really scared. Like an emotional, you only sense your emotion when you look at it. What is that? Self-reflectance, observation, self-observation.
Yeah.
But we're going to talk more about that when we come back on 90 Day Soulmate with Lizette.
And Jim.
Right after this.
Tired of attracting the wrong type of guy, it was time to give something else a try. In just 90 days, that is all it took. How she found her match? It is in the book.
90 Days Soulmate is brought to you by 90 Day Solutions.
Welcome back to 90 Day Soulmate with Lizette.
And Jim.
We're chatting about flight or fight. Relationships, when to choose to stay in, when to leave, things that affect emotions. We want to talk about a little bit about other subjects that we talk about within 90 Day Soulmate, which, what's the difference between drives and emotions? And so emotions come and go. And you were just talking about this too a little bit, is that they momentarily move us to action that based upon something that happens just now. Like if we're fearful, it changes our body, our body chemistry. If we're happy, it also does. If we're sad, if we're shocked, if we're disgusted, these all are reactions instantaneously that may cause us to do something, but they're not a state that we can stay in that easily, or it becomes really bad for us. They're tied to facial expression, chemically and physically change the body. Drives, on the other hand, drives are those things that are inborn in us for the continuation of the species. They hold on to us. They don't let go. We're talking about sex drive, hunger. They're difficult to control. Chemicals kick in that control our actions. Why do I bring it up? Because we were talking about paths that lead to infidelity. And you can have the one path of being unhappy, sad, angry in your relationship, and you have anger moving you to something. And that's what I'm saying, is that happy doesn't move you to infidelity. But what typically does is a drive, is this thing called lust, right? We talked about lust in a previous show and how chemicals change in our mind and we start thinking without our frontal cortex. So our logic goes away. We're willing to cheat because it's exciting. And this is a innate evolutionary biological part of us that actually does shut off our ability to think right and make, and it helps us make stupid decisions.
Yeah.
Right? So what? So what does that mean? Whoops. I'm going to skip that. All right. I'm going to skip that. Emotions are temporary. We talked about that. Okay, so the chemical path to infidelity being lust, chemical release, drive is not an emotion. So we feel like we're in love and we might put emotional, we may call what we're feeling happiness. We may call what we're feeling certain things, but we are putting, what are we putting? We're putting definitions around it. Lust, we're saying, oh, I'm so much in love, where it's like chemically lust. We, in order to save relationships, we have to stop thinking that lust is a constant state of being, that it is a passing part of a relationship.
Yeah. It's also depend how people value the loss, because some people loss is here, other people is here,
And sometimes it's age related, sometimes it's maturity, sometimes it's just personality.
Yeah.
How somebody is.
Yeah. So many variants.
And some people can really relate to the how do I connect with the person? Can I have great conversations?
Yeah.
And others are like, I don't care about conversation.
Yeah.
More emotional. Less conversation.
Yeah, not talk is better.
So what happens in a relationship? Let's say we're in a relationship, and then I have lust for another. Shutting down my prefrontal cortex.
Okay.
And then I start making decisions. But also what happens is that now I start creating arguments in my relationship to justify my lustful attraction. So that's something to be careful of, whether it's you or your partner. If you start seeing that there's like weird arguments going on, things that you never argued about before, it could be that their frontal cortex is being shut down by some exterior motive, some lustful relationship. So I don't know if that's an indication, but that could be. And fighting for the relationship, how to fight for it. So I think I'm going to go to this, which is maybe here's our little plan of saving the relationship is, one, you have to decide that you want to live for love, right? That we are in love. We want to live in love. Aw, thanks, babe. They didn't see your lovely face when we did that. Happy. That we want love and we want to be in the happy state of emotion. When people ask, how are you? I'm happy. If you remember this thing we spoke about, that when people would talk about their relationship in even overly amplified, positive words, like, my relationship's wonderful, my wife is incredible, or we do things to, I love her so much, that the more someone would talk positive about their own relationship and derogatory about any other potential ones, no matter how not true it was, like, and I say, let's say it's embellished positive thoughts about your own relationship created higher levels of well-being in long-term relationships than, well, I want to be realistic about our relationship. Our relationship's just normal. It's like that having a positive view and an embellished wonderfulness to your own relationship actually creates an even better relationship. You basically start becoming what you're speaking about.
Yeah.
So is that a goal? Is that a common goal to have a wonderful relationship together?
That's his good goal.
Talk about therapy. So you have the common goals, good goals. Therapy. I think that couples who have a common goal, they want to live love, therapy is a help.
Yeah, definitely. That's something that we recommend.
We do, rather than doing nothing. It's called the plan, right? That if you plan
to fight.
To fight to stay together, fight for the love, fight
for
the happiness.
You have to include in the plan a therapy step, because we don't have all tools or knowledge.
No.
So we need to agree that we need help.
And you need to also agree on what are the commonalities that bind you together, that you want to have in your life together. The more you can agree on these are the things we want to do together, the easier it is to be together. Equal responsibility.
That is important.
You're equally responsible. It's not like you've got to change. It's like we both have to change.
You have to go to therapy. I don't need it. I am perfect.
Solve this marriage by yourself.
Yeah.
Solve this relationship. Forgiveness, that's one. Can you ever forgive the person for whatever it is they did?
Yeah.
If it is a relationship thing, if it's cheat, if it's no, I can never, no matter what, in the back of my mind, it's like, don't even bother with this step of therapy. If it's like, yes, I want to. I know I was, if I'm taking responsibility, right, co-responsibility for what happened. Was I in a space, a time, did I do something that helped create this problem?
It's not you, it's me.
Enough about me. What do you think about me?
Yeah.
So is forgiveness possible also? Is saving the relationship even possible? So one is, if you look at it and go, is it possible to do this? And you say, you know what, I'm looking at this and it's just not possible. There are so many problems. It's like, then the best plan may be to book that flight.
Yeah.
Set that next destination and agree to separate.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe that stops arguments. Maybe that makes both of your lives better. And maybe you can actually love each other as friends in being helpful in the success of each other's future.
Yeah.
And then finally, how to know when to fight for the relationship or make flight plans. Well, that was the whole idea here of this show, which is it forgivable? Do you both take responsibility? Do you have common goals? Do you want to live in love and happiness with the person? And do you agree to do this together and say, yes, we want to? And if that's the case, then make fight plans. Fight for the relationship. That's our
recommendation. So make a plan, put goal, target, responsibility, and resource.
So one of the points I think that you just made is put a target. You could say, okay, you know what? We don't actually know what we want to do right now. We're going to take the next 3 months and we're going to evaluate. We're going to look at. We're going to investigate what it would take for us to stay together so we can, at the end of the 3 months, determine, do we want to do that?
Yeah, yeah. And also you have something more evidence, is something changed in these 3 months.
Right.
You know,
how invested are they into the relationship? Do you change? Do they change? Is there positive movement? Are you going towards your goal? If that's the case, we wish you the best of luck in any situation. With love on
90 Day Soulmate.
With Lizette.
And Jim.
Have a great week.
Bye.
You're listening to 90 Day Soulmate with the relationship engineers, Jim Golnick and Lizette Guevara, only on LA Talk Radio.